Jesus said, "Blessed are the persecuted," and they are suffering big time right now. This is Bible League International, and 19-year-old Aria was beaten by her own father and violated by local authorities. You know what her crime was? Simply that she gave her life to Jesus Christ after leaving radical Islam. They need Bibles in order to endure and persevere. And that's why Truth Network and Bible League are teamed up to send God's Word to 3,500 persecuted believers around the world at $5 a Bible. $100 sends 20. Call 800-YES-WORD, 800-YES-WORD. Word 800 yes word or give at truthnetwork.com.
This is Sam from the Mask and Journey podcast, and our goal with the podcast is help you to try to find your way in this difficult world. Your chosen Truth Network podcast is starting in just seconds. Enjoy it, share it, but most of all, thank you for listening and choosing the Truth Podcast Network.
This is the Truth Network.
Gentlemen, the following contest is set for one fall. Introducing first, from Lithuania, he weighs 123 kilos, the Russian Nightmare, Nikita Koloff.
Welcome to another episode, Q&A with Koloff, the Devil's Nightmare. Today, coming all the way from our friends up north of the border, up in old Canada, Jordan Clark, welcome to the Q&A show with Koloff.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you. Some of your listeners might know me better as Duke Durango, former wrestler at Stampede Wrestling and Prairie Wrestling Alliance.
Well, come on, because I know, and we'll talk about that. We'll talk about what you're doing up there in Calgary. But you guys, you say, like we say Calgary down here, you pronounce it a little different, right?
Well, we just kind of, we're lazy, right? So I shouldn't say lazy, we're just too busy to say the whole word. So we kind of take the airy out of the back and just make it a re, right? So yeah, most people from outside will say, you'll hear people say, I'm from Calgary.
Yes.
They're going to say, no, you're not. You're from Calgary.
That's how I'm like, Calgary. How's that? Anyway, yeah. So, well, which home of the Hart Foundation, right? The Stu Hart. And of course, you said you're a product of the dungeon for those who are familiar with the Hart family, right?
I am. I started training there in fall 1996.
Okay.
Yeah, under Bruce Hart. So he got stretched by Stu a couple of times, but by the time I was training there, I think Stu was probably, I'd guess him at 80, 81 when I was breaking in. So he could still, you know, once he got his hands on you, he could still stretch you, but, you know, you could run away from him.
He couldn't keep up with you. Gosh.
That was your chance. If you could get a run for it, you could get away. But once he got a hold of you, even at 80, you were finished.
Yeah. He'd have hands like vice grips. Like he just, he'd tie you up like in a pretzel or something, right?
The first time my friend and I met him, I mean, I actually met him at an amateur wrestling tournament when I was a kid. He was giving out medals or something. And I met him there, and I met Owen actually at the University of Calgary tournament doing the same thing. And so the first time I really get to have a conversation with him, we were up in the kitchen of the Hart House. And I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it was an industrial-sized kitchen. Like it was, you know, they had 12 kids, so they had a commercial kitchen in their home. And he had my buddy up against his cabinet, up against a spice cabinet, and kind of had sort of a reversed version of the thread through on, and had his chin in my pal's eye socket. And that was what he would do to you in the kitchen.
Okay. I'm just trying to get a visual of that, right? And now for the record, like I recently interviewed Danny Warren, who has he's had an organization, I think since 2009, I think, Canadian Wrestling Elites. And I was fortunate in 2017 to do a 21 city tour in 21 days across your beautiful country of Canada and with Calgary being one of the stops. In fact, the night we did our show there, I got to meet quite a number of the Hart family, because Danny honored the Hart family there that night at the show. So it was kind of, yeah, it was kind of fun to meet them all. We did a drive-by. I didn't get to go into the house and see or experience the dungeon, but I've heard many stories. Were they all true, Jordan? All the stories true?
You know what's funny is you hear the stories and you think there's hyperbole there. You always think, okay, you know, this is the wrestling business, so it's all been laced with exaggeration or hyperbole. And then you kind of start digging into it and realize that everyone tells the same story. And there's no deviation. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, well, obviously, if I'm hearing the story from six different people, they're telling me the exact same story. It there must be truth there. Do you know what I mean? So it's like I always kind of wondered. Like people wonder about the Hart family, and I always say, like, I don't care who you are, I don't care what you do, but when you grow up with a wrestling bear that lives under the front porch of your house, and you'll let ice cream drip down your toes so a wrestling bear can lick ice cream off your toes, you've had a different upbringing than anyone else you know.
Okay, so you weren't just making that up, were you? That was like a real story, right?
That's a 100% true story. And it was one of those, again, when I heard it, it's like, no. And then you see pictures of the wrestling bear and hear from a couple different family members the same story. It's like, oh, man, they did have a wrestling bear under the stairs that licked ice cream off their feet.
Oh, my gosh, this is classic. This is incredible. So you, okay, all right, I'm not even sure where to go from there, from the wrestling bear. So okay, but let's back up just for a second. So you're sure. So you're born and raised up there. You got a family up there. Tell us a little bit about yeah, Jordan.
Yeah, you know, I mean, when I wrestled, you know, everybody can't be from the same hometown, and most of us were local here when I broke in with Stampede. So, you know, I built out of Waco, Texas, and for a long time they made me walk around and try and put on this phony Texas accent that sounded horrible. But yeah, I'm born and raised in Calgary as well as my wife, which is kind of a rare thing. Calgary's an oil, kind of an oil boom city. So it's a lot like Las Vegas, where it's getting to a point where there's not a lot of people from Calgary anymore. Most people move here. And yeah, I have a fantastic daughter. She lives up north in Grand Prairie in another one of the oil cities here in Alberta. So yeah, man, I just kind of do my thing, rolling along. I'm actually a parts technician by trade. So, you know, didn't retire on my huge wrestling money.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So your career, so you break into Stampede Wrestling, essentially. And you, how long was your wrestling career?
You know, kind of little breaks here and there, you know, burnout and things like that, is, you know, you can.
Attend. Oh, yeah.
But I probably, I started training in 96, and I had my very last match November 24th, 2018. So I would say in between there, I probably had 5 or 6 years where I wasn't wrestling. So probably 14 or 15 years.
Sure.
All total.
Yeah.
You know, probably, I tried to do the math once, and it was tough because we used to wrestle. You know, like that schedule you wrestled with Danny Warren, and one of the things that impresses me about Danny Warren, if I can put him over for a second, is the sheer number of shows he runs for an independent promotion, because that's how we broke in Stampede, right? Like, our first tour was 10 shots in 11 nights. So I have nothing but respect for that. There's a lot of nights we worked twice. I kind of counted it up one time and figured I probably had about 1,800 matches.
Right. Yeah. And it is hard to calculate, right? Like, people ask me, you know, and I was able to break it down into 1 year and where I had 454 matches in just 1 year. Right. And
right.
So yeah, so you get it. So when I went on Danny's tour, fortunately I wasn't in the ring and putting the boots and tights on, but it, nevertheless, it was still grueling. I mean, 21 days in 21 cities, and we covered 5,500 miles. I don't know what that translates into kilometers, but a lot, you know.
that's darn near 10,000 kilometers.
Okay, right? So there you go.
6,300 miles would be 10,000 kilometers.
So close to 10,000 kilometers. We all over the road, by the way. There was no flying involved other than when I flew into Canada and then flew back home. But a great experience nonetheless. And One of my favorite memories, you're probably familiar, the town of Banff, I guess, how you say it?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, you bet.
Yep. One of my all-time favorite memories was we took four young guys up there. We got up there early, were able to kind of spend part of the day there in between towns and just had so much fun there in seeing the city of Banff. And so anyway, so what would be a quick highlight or two of your career for our listeners? What would you share?
I had a couple. For me, my highlights were maybe different than some people, but I wasn't somebody that got into wrestling to win titles and things like that. I truthfully got in to try and make a living at wrestling. I was an amateur wrestler that converted to pro wrestling. So it wasn't about winning belts, which I think was maybe wrong. I should have set the goals a little differently. But having said that, probably the biggest moment was when I won the British Commonwealth mid-heavyweight title from Bruce Hart. And more important than the title for me, Nikita, was actually who held that title previously. Because if people know the Calgary territory, they know the guys like, you know, obviously Bret Hart and Owen Hart. And then you have Davey Boy Smith and Dynamite Kid and kind of somewhat less famous but local legends like the great Gamma Singh. The lineage that held that title more than anything and the respect that came along with it was probably the highlight of my career. Mm-hmm. And then being able to carry it for, I think, 400. And somebody told me a while ago I had the most amount of championship days with that belt. So it's that's probably my biggest highlight.
Wow, that's awesome. Well, congratulations on that.
Thanks.
That's amazing. And I learned from Danny. I didn't realize that Canada had his territories all across Canada, right? Much like the U.S. in the early days of wrestling in the U.S. before the major organizations took over. But so that was pretty amazing to learn that.
I think there were probably six main territories.
Excuse me. That's amazing, though. Yeah. That's amazing. So, well, very good. Well, thank you for sharing that. I'm excited about that, to hear that part of your story. So, well, let's segue and transition here and give you the opportunity to ask me a couple, three, four questions and have some fun. You ready to do that?
Absolutely, absolutely.
All right, fire away. What's your first question, Jordan?
Well, now, one of the things we keep hearing, and you and I talked briefly before we came on, that you don't watch a ton of wrestling today, which I can attest I try to keep up, but A, it's too much, there's too much on TV for me to watch it all, and B, it's hard to find carve out 3 hours on a Monday to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
But the one question I had for you now, I don't know if you heard about this interview that The Undertaker did, probably last year, and he talked about how, you know, maybe back in the day, you know, I'd say back in your day, especially, you know, the late 70s, early 80s, the men were manlier, for lack of a better term, and, you know, there were guys that traveled with guns in their bags. And he said it, the way he said it almost romanticized it. Do you know what I mean? That the business was a little better off then. And I'd wondered if you'd, A, have you ever, you know, did you ever happen to see anybody, say, with a gun in the locker room, or did you ever have to deal with anything like that in your day?
That's a good, it's really a very unique question. I've not been asked anything like that before, but believe it or not, I have an answer.
I knew you would, really.
Yeah. So really a couple guys come to mind. Don Kernodle, who, you know, he and Uncle Live, Uncle Love Chateau Etat, right? Who, by the way, people ask me all the time, they're like, I just figured out you're not from Russia. And I'm like, oh, good that you figured that out. And then they're like for real, like this just recently happened, like within, you know, a week or two ago. And I'm like, okay. And then they're like, well, but was Ivan really from Russia? I go, well, no, but he was closer than I was because he was from Vancouver, Canada. Oh, Canada, right? And they're like, oh my gosh, he wasn't even from Russia either. I go, well, no, but he was much closer to the border there. So anyway, but Don Kernodle, who was Ivan's partner, always packed. But an even better story, I think, is a guy by the name of Buddy Landell. Do you know that name?
Yeah, 100%.
Nature Boy Buddy Landell. He was kind of a Flair spinoff in kind of the way I view it. But I'll never forget, Jordan, like he and I were riding to a town one time. And we were actually, I remember going through Charlotte. And he, he was weaving in and out of traffic. I mean, reckless, in my view anyway. Like, I valued my life, okay, especially in an automobile. And he was reckless, dude. And I'm like, dude, like slow down. We're not late. If anyone knew Buddy Landell, it's just kind of who Buddy Landell was, right? He was just kind of
right.
He was kind of reckless.
Every single 1,000 miles an hour.
Yeah. And I'm like, dude. And the next thing I know, he goes, we're all good. He goes, if anything happens, and he reaches underneath his seat, and I'm like, dude, what are you doing? Like, put that thing down, put that thing away. I mean, somebody sees that. I don't even know what the laws are here in North Carolina, you know, the whole right. Conceal, open carry, all that kind of thing. I'm not even familiar with any of that. I'm like, but so here's the story. Here's the deal, though. Here's the rest of the story. We get to the town, wrestle. He gets me home, and I made a decision right there and then. I will never ride in a car again with Buddy Landell behind the wheel. I just, done, right?
Yeah, last thing you need is a reckless guy.
Oh, my gosh. I'm like, and he was, in my view, reckless while he was driving reckless, right? So anyway, so yeah, it was, I get it. You know, and then, of course, you know, you hear the stories about Harley Race and you know, Dick Murdoch, the redneck Dick Murdoch, and I mean, some tough, just like legit tough guys, right? And yeah.
You know what's funny is I was talking to somebody a while ago, and when you talk about the tough guys and the way, and I don't think this is necessarily a bad thing, it just is, and I think it's actually more of a tell on society, is each generation in wrestling seems a little bit softer than the last. Do you know what I mean? Like, I remember going to the dungeon. There was a crop of kids at the dungeon, and they were all really nice kids, and they were good athletes. And I remember thinking, these guys wouldn't have made it out of our dungeon.
You're listening to the Truth Network and TruthNetwork.com.
If you would like to support Koloff for Christ Ministries, for a gift of $25, Nikita will send you his 2 CDs, Adoration and Declaration. For a gift of $50, Nikita will include his book, Wrestling with Success. And for a gift of $100 or more, Nikita will include a signed copy of his newly updated life story, A Tale of the Ring and Redemption. Go to www.koloff.net and donate today.
Nikita Koloff here, and I am excited. Did you hear the huge announcement? The big announcement? Well, maybe it's a minor announcement. Anyway, Facebook, go look up my new fan page, Nikita Koloff Fans, and like it and follow today.
You're listening to the Truth Network and TruthNetwork.com.
But then I remember, then I started thinking, like, well, would I made it out of the Dynamite Kids dungeon? Do you know what I mean? And
yes.
Would Dynamite have made it out of old Stu Hart's original dungeon?
Right.
You know, back in the day. And I thought, you know, we come down harder on this new generation. It's like each generation's probably got it a little easier than the last one. And I think your generation was kind of the last generation of that, where you really had to be able to look after yourself on the road.
I think I would, in a sense, certainly agree with that. And even, you know, I think about my good friend Lex Luger and his experience with the Japanese, the name just...
Oh, Yokozuna.
No, not his match. Who trained him? Gosh, why did it slip my mind? Anyway, it may come back to me, but you know, in Tampa, and he literally his trainer like literally broke Hulk Hogan's leg in training camp because Hulk was goofing off. And
I should know this. Yeah, I know this.
I know it's just slipping my mind, but and especially the Japanese, right? I mean, they take it super serious, right? And so Lex took it super serious because that's who he was trained by, right? So anyway, all that to say, some of those different trainers, Vern Gagne, you know, Brad Ringens, you know, you talked about Stu stretching guys, you know, Brad Ringens would have guys. Ole and Gene Anderson. I mean, they guys want to break right. into the NWA, and they stretched guys, right? So anyway, right. So
there's
good question.
You can find one of the interesting things in it. One of the things I'll tell you about the hard house is it was boiler heated, so there's pipes that ran through every floor of the house. And there was a hole from one of the living rooms down into the dungeon. And Stu had somebody down there. You can hear this. If you watch the documentary Wrestling with Shadows, I know there's disc footage on there. And Owen dropped an old tape recorder microphone down that hole, and you can hear Stu making a grown man cry down there.
I have no doubt. Hiro Matsuda. I'm pretty sure that was Lex's training.
Yeah,
Hiro Matsuda.
While we were sitting here, yeah, it is.
Yeah, Hiro Matsuda. Well, great question. Yeah. Let's roll on. If you got another one for me, let's roll on.
I do. Now, if you had one piece of advice, you know, young, I bet you get this a lot. If you have one piece of advice you just consistently give young people trying to break in, what is that?
Great question. I'll use my tour across Canada, actually, as part of the answer to that question, because there were a lot of young guys on that tour. And early into the tour, you know, they were coming to me going, hey, did you watch my match? Would you know? And they were very respectful and very sincere and saying, any advice you'd have for me, right? And you know, there's seven, eight matches on the card. I'm like, guys, I can't watch all the matches and remember all the matches. You know, if I had a notebook... Well, like literally like the next night, one of the young guys brought me a notebook and an ink pen. He goes, could you like make notes? And I'm like, sure. And so I did. And here's what I said to him, though. Jordan, I said, I could probably give you some advice, but understand this. I was trained up old school by Ivan Koloff, right. Don Carnoto, Dusty Rhodes, other guys. So the advice I give you, what I'm seeing, the product you're putting on, what you're doing in the ring, I go, my brain can't keep up with. I go, I can give you some advice if you'll listen to it. And I go, no, we'll do it. I'm like, okay. So the best piece of advice I gave them was less equals more.
Right.
Less equals more. Yeah. And they just kind of looked at me. I'm like, guys, you go out there and do 100 moves in 37 seconds and nobody in that audience can compute what you just did. I go, I could work a headlock for 3 minutes and do nothing else but a headlock and draw the fan into the story. And so here's my advice. And so I will say to their credit, a couple, three, four of them, I'd give them my advice. They'd actually go out the next night and actually do it and come back and say, they look at me and they go, wow, that really worked. I'm like, hello. That's what the business was founded on, you know, way back when. So
that. Well, and one thing with these young guys don't understand is if you get to the show at WWE and you're working 270 days a year, you need to be able to work a headlock for 3 minutes a night.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know, that wear and tear, like that's like say less is more.
Less equals more. And so slow it down. Let the fans actually register what it is you're doing. And don't let them dictate the match to you. Your objective should be to dictate the match to them. Now, on that note, I'll say this, and we got time for one more question for you.
Sure.
It is on that note, obviously the business has changed over the years, and many of these guys don't have the luxury of calling their own match or, you know, telling their own story, right?
Yeah.
You know, maybe some do, but for the way I understand it, because I don't watch a lot of the new product, is, you know, between writers and even interviews. I mean, 100% of my interviews were spontaneous. No scripts, none, zero, zip.
Yeah.
100% spontaneous. And I would say 96% of my matches were spontaneous improv done in the ring. Very little communication prior to a match. And so different business, but hopefully some of those guys get that opportunity. And I'll say this too, you're right. I do agree that some of the guys, you know, wouldn't have made opening bell, you know, in our era. So great question.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, it actually segues, that whole answer segues into my third question, which was kind of how do you feel about where the business is going today? Do you know what I mean? And I kind of think you just answered it.
Well, and again, kudos. I mean, not taking away anything from the guys.
One thing I say is these kids athletically and creatively are at a level I don't think I could have achieved. And so I always give them that respect.
Yes. Well, and so I would say to the guys in the ring in today's era, you know, certainly taking nothing away from their athletic ability and for their performance and what they're doing in the ring at all, taking nothing away from that. You know, could it ever come full circle back around? I think they've pushed the envelope far enough that I don't think it could. So it's a different product, and it certainly has a fan following. But I'll say this too, and I've just recently had this discussion. Somebody asked me recently, did you ever think, you know, 40 plus years later, 40 years later, you know, you'd be traveling around doing these autograph signings and people would be coming out of the woodwork to get your autograph, to get a picture with you and all that. The short answer is no. Never in a million years did I ever feel, you know, there'd be such a demand for the, quote, legends of wrestling and what many have termed the golden era of wrestling. Would we have this kind of appeal to the fans? So kudos to all you fans out there that fell in love with wrestling at whatever age and whatever period of time you from current day product to all the way back. Kudos to all of you for your support, like for real. I can, you know, I'm just appreciative of that. So, yep.
I think that's something I think all us wrestlers need to really recognize is, you know, without the fans, we have nowhere to ply our trade.
Look, I was just honored at a banquet in Charlotte. It was called The Gathering, and they honored me at a banquet that night. And I said, you know what? I'm only up here because of all of you. I mean, you know, I got to sit at the table with eight fans and share some personal stories. And said, if not for you, the fan, I would not have had a career. And certainly all these years later, be able to, again, go out and Jordan, the fact that somebody still wants my signature or a picture with me and is even, you know, willing to pay for that just blows me away. I'm so honored and grateful and just feel so blessed to be able to have that opportunity. So,
I mean, it's an honor and a blessing for us to have guys like you around. You know, Nikita, you're such a gracious man and you're just so respectful to the business and all the people in it. And I really and truly believe that it's our good fortune to have men like you in the business.
Well, I appreciate it. I appreciate your time today. I certainly appreciate the questions and just excited. Man, I didn't know that part. So, you know, some of your story. So I was excited now to hear some of your story, Jordan. Appreciate you being on the show today.
Oh man, I appreciate you having me on. You know, I'm pretty humble about my status of where I am in life. And when somebody like you is willing to take some time to talk to me, it's always a big thrill. So I appreciate it.
Well, Jordan Clark, Q&A with Koloff. I hope you, those of you in listening land, enjoyed the conversation today and some of Jordan's story. And tune in again for another episode of Q&A. God bless you.
This podcast is made possible by the grace of God and your faithful prayers, support, and generous gifts. May God bless you for your continual contributions. Go to koloff.net and donate today. Hi, Nikita Koloff. Be sure to check out the Man Up Show, now available on television, broadcast, and podcast. Go to MorningstarTV.com or the Truth Radio Network. Check out your local listings, or better yet, download the Truth Network app today. Nikita Koloff here. If you're needing to buy a car and have marginal credit and considering using Buy Here, Pay Here, that's worse than taking the Russian sickle. Winston-Salem Motor Cars will put you behind the wheel of a car you can rely on while helping rebuild, repair, or establish your credit score. Conveniently located on Silas Creek Parkway in Winston-Salem, be sure to check them out today at WSMC1.com because you are number one.
This is the Truth Network.